Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host today, Josh Brown, joined by Ben Roy Turner.
Hello there.
And Jules Gill, whose name I got right this time. This is our second take.
Hello, everyone.
And we're going to talk about Resident Evil 8, because if you've been following the main What Culture Gaming YouTube channel, we have done loads and loads of news on Resident Evil 3, on Resident Evil 8, because leaks have just been coming out the wazoo, and we're kind of just going to do a breakdown of everything we know and talk about what we want to see, what we hope doesn't make it from the leaks, what we hope does, and kind of just talk through the future of the Resident Evil franchise, because if I had my way, I'd turn the entire channel into a Resident Evil themed channel, but sadly that cannot happen, so I'm taking over this podcast. I've locked Scott Tailford in a closet or a casket somewhere.
All that you can hear is he's just like slamming against it, like, oh, let me out, I want to talk about Metal Gear.
Not today, Scott. Let me talk about Resident Evil.
We bury you. I mean, the thing is there is huge potential for us to do What Culture Stars channel. Star culture definitely should be a thing.
Like, I mean, how many videos have we collectively all been part of or something put out in the past few months?
But you know why? It's because of the fact that Resident Evil is just one of those franchises that's not just enduring despite a lot of the problems that's faced over the years. It's one that's managed to capture the world's attention, because while Silent Hill was off doing the sort of, oh, what does it mean? The context of horror in the sort of like the psyche. This was much more of a body horror thing, that like the Cronenberg and the sort of like disgusting body morphy stuff. And that is just a very Western horror theme that it's managed to just capture and catapult its way through. I mean, you've managed to get some films out of it as well, haven't you?
Yes.
Which films do you like?
I like every film, including even the animated ones.
Yeah, everything.
Animated one, the third one's all right. I guess it's canon, it's fun.
But there's a third one.
There's three animated ones. Yeah, Vendetta or something like that it's called.
And they are drastically leaping quality.
Rebecca Chambers is in that. She returns for the first time since Zero.
I've seen the one where there's a zombie full of planes. Aeroplanes.
Do you want to rephrase that?
A plane full of zombies. Yeah. That would be wild if it was the other way around.
I think that one's Degeneration. But the best one is obviously the 2000 Resident Evil.
The very first one.
Yeah, best one. And then number five's next. And then we don't need to talk about the final chapter.
It's got your mate Salmon in, hasn't it?
Colin Salmon, yes. Yeah. It's a Colin Salmon production with Colin Salmon. Both the Colin Salmon films are actually really good. Colin Salmon.
So as you can see here, the Resident Evil fan, the atypical one, puts up with a lot of crap.
Yes.
And we've put up with a lot of crap over this series.
Well, that's it. You know, Colin Salmon fan club aside, the Resident Evil franchise is probably the most malleable of any popular video game franchise, I think. It has been retooled and rebooted and reinvigorated so many times over the decades since it launched that many people have different ideas of what Resident Evil even is. Some think of it as the classic, you know, the survival horror driven, the top, almost top down sort of tank controls, sort of.
Yeah, the fixed camera.
Fixed camera, you know, all of those things. Then you have the Resident Evil 4 style, you know, more action orientated, over the shoulder, third person shooters. And now we've got the Resident Evil 7 style, which I think a lot of fans haven't seemed to have taken to as much as I originally thought, because I love that game. But I know the first person perspective is a point of contention.
Well, it's interesting because when it first was, I actually looked up some facts for today's podcast. podcast as well. Like, for example, I didn't know until today that originally Resident Evil 1 was going to be a first-person shooter. Mm. They always had it planned that it was going to be a first-person shooting game, but then they took it away, retooled it, and made it more cinematic because they thought that they could wow people with graphical things by having so much more detail in the environments, by having fixed cameras. A perfect design choice that it actually put them on the map. If it was just another first-person shooter along the lights of like Doom or anything like that, would it have been as successful?
Imagine if we got Dead Aim as the... Was it Dead Aim? Or
yeah,
the,
Umbrella Chronicles one as well.
The very first Resident Evil game when you're just walking around in a really bad base and you've got to walk to the corner and then slowly turn around as Mr. X is looking at you and you get one shot and you've got to run around again. I mean, there have been some really bad like iterations. I think people love that game for some reason.
What, the Survivor, Resident Evil Survivor, they like that game?
The very first one on PS1 that was like a first-person shooter. And I should really know
that. Yeah, I think it is Survivor. That, yeah. Right, that's not a good game.
No.
I'm sorry, like, using the D-pad as a aiming reticle thing, that is not good. It wasn't even when analog sticks were out at the time, so you literally had to just be like, oh, I can only move in literally four directions.
I love the franchise, but the original Resident Evil wasn't amazing either. We just played it because they're great zombie games. I think original
Resident Evil, I'm not sure if I want to stand for this.
You down the hill of Resident Evil, a remake is the best thing ever.
Yeah,
so
actually,
you can go over there.
Yeah, you can. You also think that Resident Evil 6 is good.
Yeah, you do.
I tell you what, before we descend into the absolute madness, should we actually detail what we know about Resident Evil 8, and then we can go back through the games and detail what we liked and didn't like?
That's quite a good idea, Jules. You should be hosting this podcast, if you have my opinion. Otherwise, we're just going to talk about Colin Salmon all day. So, yes, a recent leak was sent into Biohazard Declassified, the website, which revealed apparently some more light on what we should expect from the in-development Resident Evil 8. And that includes that Ethan, who was the protagonist of Resident Evil 7, is returning in some capacity, as is Chris Redfield, who showed up at the end of that game and in the game's DLC. It has been confirmed that it will be first person, not just from this leak, but Eurogamer has since corroborated that, yes, the game is going to be first person. They've, you know, talked to their sources and corroborated that fact, which, as we mentioned at the beginning, might, you know, split some fans. Apparently, zombies are going to be back as well, which kind of makes sense after the success of Resident Evil 2, but replacing the molded from Resident Evil 7, I'm not sure how I feel about that. I didn't love the molded, but going back to zombies, as much as I love zombies, and the Resident Evil franchise was, you know, defined by them at first, I don't know if that's a step back. I don't know.
It's a really interesting one because over the years, we've seen the type of viruses that have been used by Tricell and Umbrella have been completely different from one another. Like, obviously, apart from Resident Evil 3, that was the last time that, air quotes, zombies actually technically existed, because everything after that was Las Plagas, like all the other stuff as well. So to have it go back, they're going to have to engineer something in the story to explain why a T-virus-esque virus has been created for this. The only thing I can think of is that they're going to wield out the bad boy again, and Albert Wesker is going to make a return, because he is obsessed with the Tyrant program, and the only way that, like, the T-virus, G-virus, it's like his baby.
Do you think they're going to do... I'm sorry to go back to the films, but they pulled out, like, oh, by the way... Dr. Isaacs was just a clone and the real one's in another pod, because the Wesker project, do you really think that Oswald E. Spencer only made the 12 or 14 of them,
yeah,
and that's it, you didn't have a few spare, you know, in the cupboard somewhere.
It's one of those things where Albert Wesker, for me, is one of the perfect video game villains, because he's like campy, he's really over the top. I mean, that Chris thing will go down in infamy for both the right and wrong reasons. He was super powered, he was 90s cool in 2010, which as a throwback to me is just fascinating video game design.
Somehow worked.
And like, you know what, he died in a volcano in 5, is because they were like people from Capcom going like record saying, now we want a reason, like, you can't come back from that, you can't come back from rocket launches in a volcano.
Have they not witnessed any of the Tekken franchise games? Being thrown into a volcano is pretty much just like being kicked in the shin a little bit. You just walk it off.
I think if Wesker comes back from this and that's the OG Wesker, then I mean, I'm game for it. I don't not want to see Wesker ever again.
It's a real shame, because Capcom have taken quite a few decisions across the timeline of these games, which has like irreparably changed what happens. Like, there is no Raccoon City anymore, because obviously it gets nuked at the end of 3. But it's a shame, because that is such an identifiable location. They could have mined that out a bit further.
I will say, though, I think it's both good and bad that they do make those decisions to move on, because like I said at the beginning, you know, this franchise is always so good at reinvigorating itself, and that's because it does stick to consequences and changes, and it develops characters. It might not always develop them in interesting or good ways, but it occasionally, mostly, sticks to its guns.
I totally agree with you, and the move away from 3 to 4 obviously resulted in what is arguably one of the greatest games that's ever been made. Like, the amount of times that Ben Roy has completed it is unfathomable at this point.
Unlimited rocket launchers, mate. I'll just kill everything in one shot. There we go.
But they make these decisions, and then they kind of retroactively seem like they've not pulled the trigger on anything new to replace them. Like, remember in Resident Evil 5, they had the DLC that took you back to Spencer's mansion, and that was almost an exact replica of the Resident Evil 1 mansion, because they were clearly going like, oh god, people really like the first games, like they want this, and we'll just give them what they want. Who can you say has replaced Wesker as a focal point of fear in that series? There's no one, because they always either get killed off by the end of their own games, or they don't have any sort of like persistence.
It's kind of a problem that they have, the where they kill the baddies eventually, and all sort of like the nice good cast all seem to survive bar like one or two people.
That's why they need
every few games.
Yeah, they need to pull the trigger on
sure,
this
we
one.
We lost a load of people in RE1, but they weren't really characters yet. We didn't know a lot of the stars members. But like, how long has Chris and Jill like lasted at this point?
Like at this point in time, the fact that Leon, Chris, Claire, Jill are still going, it's almost like unbelievable. I know that they're meant to be like the people who survive by the skin of their teeth, but you know, when it's like the Roman Reigns thing, when you win so much by the skin of your teeth, you're still winning. Like, you're just seen as superheroes. I mean, Chris is literally, you've seen the size of his biceps. I mean, he's toned down a little bit for Resi 7,
not
thankfully.
Not anymore,
But like, seriously, that was like the point of parody. And I'm hoping that Capcom will be brave enough, because taking a risk and putting it into first person for Resident Evil 7 was a huge gamble after the success. So I hope that they take it again and actually kill some characters.
I would like to see that, because like you said, I think Resident Evil is in a strange predicament that no other franchise ever has kind of been in the fact that it has so many beloved, iconic characters that just, there's not enough time in the day to give each one of them their own game, so they need to pick and choose who to, like, which ones to put in new releases,
well, they gave
which ones to focus
Barry
on.
His own game. Revelations 2.
I'm smiling just because I know that this is a lead in for Josh to talk about Resident Evil 6, about how they were like, oh, but they had all the time in that one and they still cocked it up.
Go on. Tell us about how Piers Niven is great.
Yeah, right. I was going to say, yes, Jules, you've caught me out here. I feel very bamboozled. But no, in Resident Evil 6, that was marketed as this, like, essentially an Avengers style crossover event. We all had like those moments in the trailers where Leon had finally met Chris, you know, on screen for the first time. And it should have been epic, but at that point in time it did just sort of feel like they were superheroes. And now we do have Ethan from Resi 7, who was more of a no-name everyman protagonist, but that both worked for that one game, but I don't think it works in the long term of setting him up as an identifiable protagonist. I don't really care if Ethan returns or not for the next game.
Nobody really dies in that one either, because apart from the poor innocent police officer in the garage, but if you play the end of Zoe DLC, she gets out all right.
All the DLC basically plugs all the gaps.
You get the real ending. Evelyn's fine. Well, Evelyn.
Mary, is it?
Maria.
Maria, that's it.
Resident Evil 7 is weird in that in the first hour, it teases you and it hits you with all of these big developments. Like, you get your arm chopped off, chainsawed off, even worse.
Yeah.
And yet you can kind of just put it back on later on. So it gives
bizarre,
you all of
it?
This strange body horror stuff that should have consequences, and yet it kind of doesn't. And I like that, but it is, I think, a sort of weird case of this franchise, like you said, never quite fully pulling the trigger. Sometimes it feels like it's shooting blanks, and that can make for exciting games. But it's weird considering, like you said, it will do things like nuke Raccoon City or make big changes to like the overall plot. But when it comes to the characters themselves, they are often the versions of them that fans want them to be. You know what I mean? We build up the likes of Chris Redfield and the likes of Leon as these big, you know, identifiable archetypes. And when things do change, like even Chris getting a new face in 7 or toning down a bit, we all kind of treat it, the fans kind of treat it as this kind of strange,
like sacrilege
experiment. It's almost like sacrilege, yeah.
It's weird because we do talk about, like, we don't get enough Raccoon City, even though we did get the first three games were all in that second two games were all in that city.
Yeah.
I think we'll get more satisfaction out when we get 3 remake, because I'm excited for them to not make it an open world, but like, say, instead of having one single street you go down the whole time, it give you the choice about 3 or 4 the whole time. And like, you know, I think it's going to be, I'm hoping it's going to be less alleyways and more actually going through Raccoon City.
I'm nervous about this remake.
And also, I'm going to say that the Raccoon City and the nuke in the Raccoon City is like the big bang of the Resident Evil universe. From there, it's spread out.
You know what?
We've got all this.
That's very poetic, that. Yes. I like that a lot. I really love that.
A big biohazard metaphor.
Yeah, yeah.
It's funny you should mention locations because a part of this biohazard declassified, you know, the rumors that they got, it did say that it wasn't going to be taking place over mostly one location like Resident Evil 1 or even Resident Evil 7 to an extent where you had the rundown mansion. This will take place from villages, it will go up to castles, it will go into snowy mountains, so it feels like it's going to have, at least structurally, it's going to be similar to Resident Evil 4 in the way, more or less in the same vein, you start in a village, you moved up to a big gothic castle, and you had all these set pieces in between.
It kind of sounds like it's going to do the Code Veronica X where it kind of like starts one place in like the prison island and then goes off into Alaska into this like sort of the Thing style base, or in like Revelations 1 where you mainly play as Jill on the ship but you got a bit of the backstory of Chris and then those other two buffoons that I forget their names.
Oh, the comedy relief characters.
Yeah, like in a base. So I feel like if Chris is going to feature a bit, you're going to have a little bit of Chris that way.
Just a little side note on those two characters in particular.
Yeah.
That ruined that side of the campaign for me there, because at no point did I feel like they were capable officers.
They were invisible enemies and they were like, oh, we're gonna get through this.
Lol. It's like it's like just walking memes, man. Sickening. Although I have to admit, Revelations on the boat, actually really good.
Shame those two didn't die. Shame even Russian man who I forget his name, who's Jill's mate for that, falls into the fire. Now he's fine as well.
Yeah, no one can die.
I still not played Revelations.
I'd really recommend it. It's really, really good. You can tell that the technical limitations are there because it was made for the 3DS first, and then obviously it was like...
But you can walk and shoot.
But you can walk and shoot. Yeah, that is a big, big one there.
I remember that when that was finally implemented in bloody Resident Evil 6.
Yeah.
And it had a bunch of other stuff as well. You could jump to the ground.
Yeah.
You could like move around. You could karate chop these zombies. You could do wrestling moves on them. It was mad, and that's why Resident Evil 6 is the greatest game ever made.
No.
But
what about Code Veronica X, Josh? You should maybe...
I love Code Veronica X. It's a great game.
Is he not playing it?
I'm not biting it. On the enemies front, quickly going back to that, in classic Resident Evil fashion, apparently there is going to be a persistent stalkerish enemy called, I think it's just called the Stalker, who is this sort of female figure who haunts you from the shadows and will show up time and time again, kind of like Mr. X and Resi 2, kind of like Jack and Resi 7. I'm not sure about this, guys, because although that sort of character is, you know, at this point integral to most of the games that we all love, I don't know how much I actually like that in 7, constantly running away from Jack and shooting him and for him to get back up. It was cool at first, but having to deal with that all the way through and having to deal with it in Resident Evil 2 and having to deal with it in the upcoming Resident Evil 3, I wonder if that gimmick has been overplayed a little bit. They might be able to do something interesting with it, but on, you know, just on the surface, we're talking about them wanting to do, you know, new things.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, I want them to kind of get away from having that thing constantly chasing you just because they've done it so much and so recently.
I mean, you have to look at how games like Alien Isolation managed to use that with its, like, you know, clever use of having two AIs, one telling you where the player was and the other one that had the mouth or was in control of the body or something like that.
It would eventually just cheat and find you.
Yeah, but it was because it was narrowing down where it was. The other one was giving hints. I feel like if they implemented that sort of system into it, it's great. By the end of Resident Evil 2 Remake, whenever Mr. X came around, I wasn't afraid. I was just kind of like, yeah, I can outrun you. You're a big fat idiot. Like,
you can't come indoors, so I mean, that's also a problem.
So you're kind of like, okay, the fear immediately dissipates when you see the limitations. But if they use it correctly, if they make this stalker character less of an enemy that follows you around the regular locations and more of a set piece enemy that you eventually leads to a boss fight, I think that would actually be a lot better.
I was about to say the same thing, like have it locked in one like specific area and don't have it through like the whole game,
because
that will just get exhausting.
Maybe like one or two areas where it can follow you in. So like when, say, you get to like the Thing base, let's say that is where they're going with this.
Yeah.
Maybe as soon as you get inside that bit there, you're only in there to maybe like turn on a communications array. I have no idea if this is what it's going to be, but I'm just, bear with me.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
That, for that section there, it follows you outside trying to grab you through the windows and break windows or like get like stuff in. Fine, that's great. But if it was then always following you wherever you are, it's just kind of like, a bit of a drag now.
I think the survival horror element like leaves after a while because you're just focusing on that thing and then you run past like a licker and you're like, oh God, now I'm getting slashed.
Yeah.
Well, it's once that mystique wears off, isn't it? It's once it just becomes a system or a mechanic or a feature rather than like an actual character or a scare where you start treating it like with your gamer brain rather than your regular frightened human brain where you're looking at how the devs have programmed it and how you can exploit it or where it's going to be and where it's not going to be.
I can't remember where I saw it, but originally there was the plans for Jack Baker was going to be that his AI was going to be incredibly ruthless. They didn't want you to be in the same room as him. It was a case of you see him, you go somewhere else and you wait for him to leave. And there was I can't remember if there was a video clip or the description was that they talked about how people use tables and like chest high walls. It's on one side and you're on the other and you're just basically running around just going, ha ha ha, you can't catch me. And they never think to obviously lean over. Well, the example that they use with Jack is that he was going to grab the edge of the table and throw it out the way, like destroying the environment. And I was like, that would have been amazing. If they'd done that immediately, my gamer brain would have been switched off because I'd be like, oh, I can't just cheese this. I have to cheese it and go.
I think there is a great example in that game as well when Jack sort of smashes through one of the walls and you don't expect it. Yeah. And it has the same effect of, this isn't supposed to happen. Yes. I don't know what to do. I'm just going to run away. And I do think they got it quite well in that title. But as we said, perhaps he just showed up one too many times or used him one too many times. I think there's a way to do it if you use them sparingly, like you said, Jules, and maybe save them for set pieces.
It's not backtracking as well. Mm. That's the thing that does it. With Resident Evil 2, when you go back and play the original game, once you go back through all of the areas that you've already cleaned out, because you will eventually get enough ammo to defeat everything on there, at least in the normal modes, it doesn't replace enemies. It's really boring. There's like a few bits where you're just walking around like there are no enemies that have come back. And while that is like realistic in that sense, it just is like, oh, right, okay.
Most of my playthroughs, I did kind of like leave the left side of the police precinct just to, you're full of zombies now. That corridor, yeah, I can't go back that way.
Yeah.
But as soon as you play on the easy difficulties, unless you're like trying not to hit them in the head, you can pretty much clean everything out.
I think.
This is what I noticed when I, last year before, or maybe even after Resident Evil 2 came out, I played through the original version of 1 on the PlayStation 1, and then I played through 1 remake on the PS4. And the thing I noticed the most is in the original game, when you do clear out parts of the mansion, they're just gone. And when you get to the later areas of the game, when you are just walking around, you're backtracking, there's no threats. Yeah. Or you're too overpowered to the point where, you know, it doesn't really matter because you've got a giant grenade launcher when you're Jill.
There is kind of a bit of a nightmare if you don't clear out properly and then you get the Crimson Heads
The hunters.
Yes. Well, this is what I'm saying. That's when I played the remake, and I thought that smartly subverted that, because areas you cleared out might have a Crimson Head there if you don't take them out properly, or they might have new enemies, things change. And I thought that dynamic approach to level design is something that I want to see more of in the Resident Evil series. Yeah. And we get it occasionally in 7, but I feel like for me, the 1 remake is still the high bar for that kind of stuff.
Because of the fact that it was constantly adding in new enemies all the time to make even familiar layouts feel uncomfortable. That's how you should do it. But when you were having situations in 7, you'd be walking around and Jack would be stalking you or whatever, and the mold would come out, and you just be like, okay, cool, right, well, there's nothing new here now, so you're not making this feel fresh. I'm just going to go, right, I know exactly where to go, I know exactly what's going to happen. And they need to make sure when they're developing Resident Evil 8 that the backtracking is either kept to a minimum to keep things fresh, or that new enemies and challenges present themselves within the same areas.
It's always a difficult sort of line to toe, I suppose, because according to these rumors, we're going to be moving around locations more often than we were in Resident Evil 7. But at the same time, part of me loves that most of Resident Evil 1 takes place in one sort of, you know, location. And I don't dislike 2 for moving away from that a little bit, but I feel like once you get out of the prison in that game, the game isn't as good as the first few hours.
Is that when you go down to the lab and everything like that?
Yeah,
the tone changes a lot in that game. It's definitely a game of 2 halves in that sense.
But at the same time, would I not be saying the same thing had they set it all in the police station? Then you got bored of the backtracking.
Yeah, that's true.
Going through. So it's a difficult needle to thread, I think.
It's weird because I kind of feel like you're in the police station just long enough.
Yeah.
But then when we get to 3. There's going to be hardly any backtracking in that at all. So that's going to be almost like a straight shoot horror game. So
I did really like 3 for that.
Yeah, it was kind of a refresh there. And also, I think it was more just for that fact that they just had to get out. So they didn't want to.
But if you look at 4 moves with a really consistent pace. The only time that you're really backtracking is when you're in the castle and you're looking for the sigils.
4's like 2 steps forward and then like 1 step back in a sort of way. You go through the village, but then you come back around just one little shot, then through a little house. And you keep doing these sort of like bigger loops and get away from everything.
I like that because it makes it, the journey there feels fresh. Like every time I came back and I was like, oh, I've been here before, but now something is totally different here.
My one knock against 4 though is when you get to the point, was it Steve in the helicopter? And you're just just mowing down these guys at the end.
I felt like that was a really weird tone shift because everything else up until that point felt really balanced. But then all of a sudden it was like waves, hordes of enemies coming towards you. Tell me where they are and I'll shoot them down. I'm like, this is a game mechanic that you are introducing way too late in this game.
Well, Jules Gill, I think this is the patented Resident Evil over-reliance of action in the final third. Because again, go back to Resident Evil 7, that had that as well. Once you were in the mines at the very end and you had, what was it, an AK-47 or something, you were just mowing down all the molded. Yeah. Made the molded not scary, it was sort of rote and repetitive in my opinion. And I feel like every single time Resident Evil indulges in those action climaxes, it kind of gets something a little bit off. Even in Resident Evil 4, which I love, like you said, it's satisfying in the moment, but it is a weird tonal shift where it's almost like they're just ticking a box of, we need a big climax, so throw this giant squid looking dude in there and give you a rocket launcher.
Well, with the Resident Evil games have always got this a really hard balancing act between empowerment and disempowerment, because the way that you create fear in like most video games is by making your character feel vulnerable. Like, you've got a knife, you can't attack all of these enemies, or you do have a gun but you don't have enough ammo to kill all of them. The moment that you give them a weapon that are capable of dealing mass amounts of damage, you basically told them that these enemies here, they're not a threat to you, because what is coming next is. And it's like that the Dark Knight the Christopher Nolan trilogy. You spend all the way through the first one learning to fear the Scarecrow. The Scarecrow is dealt with in the first 10 minutes to establish the Joker as the bigger, better threat. And these games do that, but they do it with squid bosses that have had no introduction and have no sort of like impact with the player. So you're just kind of like, oh, I was just really getting to like those guys and now you're telling me they're useless.
That is interesting, actually, because I do think that's something that Resi 2 did well in that the zombies, for the most part, at least 90% of that game, remain scary, even when they introduced, you know, those weird plant-based monsters.
Oh, the ivies.
The ivies, which were also terrifying. But
I never knew they could insta-kill you until I did one of the hunk runs, because I never let them get that close to me, because I was just like, ah, you're not get away from me, you dirty plant. It's dirty clicker impersonator, that sort of thing.
It's when the head opens to be another set of mouths and you're just like, oh my gosh.
Poor old hunk got numbed on in that one.
Chunk of hunk.
Speaking of enemies, what do you guys think about werewolves?
Not Resident Evil.
Not Resident Evil. That's a part of the leak again. Apparently there's going to be some wolf-based enemies. Hopefully they come out only on the full moons.
Now
but
that is,
I don't think it's going to be actual werewolves with silver bullets and the moon. I think it's going to be just like a Cerberus, but a bit of aggressive man body.
You know what? I actually do retract that slightly, because I have to remember that Umbrella Corporation, before they started experimenting on humans, they were experimenting on animals, hence why you have so many oversized creatures, which I thought was a lovely explanation as to why you fight a giant scorpion on a train or like
the
bat.
And well, just accidentally got infected as well. They just crawled into a thing and oh, big scorpion.
And then you get those horrible mutations in 5 and 6 that are just really gross. Like the big winged thing that you fight, I genuinely thought that was disgusting.
And like the big crab thing that's like called the UA or some really boring name like that.
So if they want to have werewolves, if it's literally just a wolf, the infected wolf's DNA that's been injected into a man, I can believe it within the Resident Evil thing if it's like Umbrella getting up to their whole sort of like gene splicing ways, but I just feel like it's a strange move to say it's zombies and werewolves, because they are two very different things.
Gotta be science or like virus based, because they even explain away a lot of the molded magic in 7 with a lot of like, oh, she her spores are actually in your brain, so she can control your brain like that, so it's never really like actual magic. But I don't want to see these mythical monsters be sort of like real.
The only way that I can think of is that if they're saying that they're going to take us to the Arctic wastes, then you're probably going to get wolves being bred with men or women there, because or like spliced over, because it's going to be this whole like you're going to be walking through this snowstorm and then all of a sudden hunted by these sort of like half human, half wolf things. That could be cool.
Hey, like
that could be very cool.
I mean, yeah,
that could be very cool. But it's just
also in Veronica when we get like.
Are you going to say the Eliminators, the monkeys?
Well, no, they're your, they can do one.
They're your favorite. They're your favorite enemies, aren't they?
It's when Wesker and I think it's
is it Slug Boy, Leech
no,
Man?
The actual this sounds really bad now because I can't remember her
That's
name.
Right.
I think her name's Veronica. The person you fight at the end of Code Veronica.
Oh, what, the one that just starts spitting fire onto the floor?
Yeah,
oh, yeah.
This sounds bad because I've written hundreds of words on her, but when Wesker starts fighting her in this room and she's actually just sort of almost like you can see she's throwing liquid, but it looks like she's just summoning fire as he's running around the walls and doing matrix kicks at her and sort of thing. I don't mind getting weird that way, but just like try and keep it in some sort of science weird thing.
I think they did get onto a winner with Resi 7 where it was like she'd infected your brain, so now you were seeing all this spooky stuff, and it kind of has a basis in science, but also gives them a license to go kind of mad with it and do what they want. Because I thought for me, I love Resident Evil, obviously. I wouldn't be doing this podcast otherwise. Yeah. But when it comes to the monster designs, I've never particularly been scared of them. I thought they were cool. Mm-hmm. I always think they're fun to fight. But for me, Resident Evil 7 in the way it channeled, you know, Evil Dead and Texas Chainsaw Massacre, that to me was actually genuinely scary. Yes.
You weren't scared of the regenerators in Resident Evil 4?
Except from the regenerators in Resident Evil 4.
Mm. I about to say, also, it's Alexia, by the way. It just came up in my head. Oh, okay. Like that. But right. They were some of the scariest things. That I remember getting into that part of the game. Now I'm just gonna come back another day.
Yeah.
that was legit. I turned the game off that point. I was like, I'll do this later. But I know what you mean. Well, some of the monsters, like, you just get so desensitized. I think that's why they chose the persistent enemies so much, because like
it's just one character,
kill it. Like, I'm more scared of Dr. Salvador in 4 when you know that unless you hit him in his bag for a head, then you ain't gonna get away, and he's just gonna one shot kill you.
Yeah. What's the name of the pursuer in Resident Evil 6? Is that the Urugant or something?
Ustaka or something.
Ustagar.
Ustagar.
Yeah. It's like that. There is just to me a a cheap Nemesis ripoff. Like, you look at it and it's like, oh, he's bigger than Nemesis. He's stronger than Nemesis. He's faster than Nemesis. He's got cool gadgets and guns. It's kind of like, you're trying too hard.
They even tried too hard. Hide and seek section in that game, but all it is you just get into a bin and then he might notice you and he blends you in the bin. And then it's like...
bin blender.
Yeah, it's never really scary like a Nemesis where he goes... doors and then you like run.
Do you know what it is? It's the Pepe Le Pew formula of it, because he walks so slowly. It's that persistent fear of an enemy that won't stop. That's why It Follows as a film is genuinely creepy. Like knowing that there is one creature walking just at walking pace towards you endlessly is much more terrifying than something charging at you, because it's like it's the threat of it rather than the immediacy of adrenaline.
Although that's saying no invisible enemies, please, they can do one.
if they make them invisible werewolves.
It's happening.
Yeah.
One thing I want to end on is that this has popped up time and time again, and it's been corroborated by this leak, is that this might not even be called Resident Evil 8. It's going to be following on from Resi 7, but Capcom apparently aren't sure whether they're going to include 8 in the title or whether it's going to be more of a spin-off, you know, like it might just follow the Resident Evil Biohazard kind of Biohazard 1, Biohazard 2. I mean, that would make it weird in Japan, where I guess it would be Biohazard 1, which
they'll probably do it Biohazard Resident Evil.
Biohazard Resident Evil, like that. But would these changes sit more comfortably with you if this wasn't a numbered sequel and was treated as more of a spin-off?
If they're going to take a big risk with it, then I would rather it be a numbered title so that it basically stands as an installment. Like, that's the whole point of it. If it feels like they've gone this far with it, down the development track, and then they just bottle out of it and say, actually, it's just a spin-off, don't count this one alongside the main games, then that actually suggests that they're not proud of it, that they're not willing to say that this is the next evolutionary step of their virus of Resident Evil.
I think it's weird, because if you put it in the Revelations category, like... people like those games, but they don't sell as well, because it's like, oh, it's not really the main game sort of thing.
And they don't get marketed as heavily either.
Yeah. I mean, you could always try and go for another sort of like, just do another sort of standalone bit in the story like Code Veronica. Like, I wouldn't mind if they did that. But well,
this
I
the
want
thing.
The narrative to move forward.
Like, Code Veronica only sold well because of the fact that it was a PS2 exclusive for a while, and it was like
after
one of
the Dreamcast died. Yeah,
yeah. So basically, it was like it came over. Actually, that was it. It was on the Dreamcast first, and then it came over. Yeah. It had all of the hype, and it was the first time that many people would play it because the PS2 sold really, really well. But it was a case of like, when you've got what other spin-offs can you name from the franchise that are actually amazing?
Yeah, it's weird because you go to like the Outbreak Files, but they're good for the multiplayer aspect and stuff. But then the only actual amazing one is CBX, and then Revelations is kind of like a nice side dish, a nice little starter.
I'd say that every single spin-off, bar a few, are great gimmicks, but they're not great games. Like, yeah. Every single one of them's got a really cool thing that they're trying to push, like, oh, it's this in this one, or it's this in this one. But I feel like Resident Evil 7 was really brave in what it did.
I think that's it as well. Even though a lot of those games are quite good, I feel like, you know, when it's a spin-off, it's viewed as another Resident Evil.
Yeah.
You know, it's not viewed as the next Resident Evil. It's just adding to the pile of extra spin-off content that's already out there, and that could be fine. You can do some great things in that space, but I feel like if they're going to do something bold, are they going to try something new? I'd like to see that number because then it will get the push, it will get the marketing, it will get the, you know, the audience it probably deserves. And you can decide you don't like that then, but to me, I do feel like it would be a bit of a cop-out to not give Resident Evil 7 a proper sequel and allow it to exist on its own as a numbered one.
I'd like to say, like, if they're going to do any sort of spin-off, it has to be, like, canon as well, because we used to get a lot of games that came out, like, they're kind of based around here, but then they get sort of, like, washed away over time.
Mm.
But as they've said that they wanted to do this as, like, the pseudo-trilogy, like, 1, 2, 3, and then 4, 5, 6, but hopefully we don't get to the, like... 8, 9, and then they're super action-y games where you're like swinging.
I'm glad that they're keeping it first person though.
I think they should. The next three numbered games should be, within the next two after 7, obviously, should be first person.
Yeah.
Stick with it, make it a thing, and then from there go wherever they want. Because if they want to remake Code Veronica X down the line, we've had the two. We hopefully 3 is amazing as well as 2.
Yeah,
I think we've had our fill of that. I mean, I always want more. Like, give me more every. Give me 50 more all the time. But Yeah, I think that we keep to the first person aspect for now and try and make it more claustrophobic and different.
I fully agree, Ben, right? I think that when we have these remake series now that lets you have the older Resident Evil experience, and we should do something new, but I suppose we should throw it over to the old listeners and see what they think. What do you guys think about these rumors? Are you looking forward to Resident Evil 8? Would you like this version of Resident Evil 8 should these leaks and rumors come true? And you can talk to us about it over on twitter.com. Jules, what's your handle?
It's RetroJ with a zero.
Benroy, what's your handle?
Benroy Turner.
Mine is Josh Broom with two O's. You have been listening to the What Culture Gaming podcast. We will see you soon. Goodbye.
Bye.
Stars.
Stars.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.